Coronalization, an audiobook by Omananda. For readers of the printed book and audiobook listeners, there's a reference page to all related links of this book. Visit omananda.com/coronalization for more info. No part of this publication may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, electronic, mechanical, photocopying, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission from the publisher, with the exception of short quotes of less than 150 words in reviews and publications on social networks and elsewhere, in which case a link to the publication and the publisher must be used. Copyright 2020 Omananda, all rights reserved. Omananda.com. Dedication. This book is dedicated to the heroes of our times. All those tirelessly working people who keep the basics running as much as possible during the COVID-19 pandemic that brings us globally together in unprecedented ways as one human race. I'd especially like to thank the nurses, the doctors, and first aid response teams who work overtime to save lives. The delivery teams providing food and the essentials to grocery shops, the farmers, the factory workers, the cleaners, the gardeners, and the garbage teams. All social workers who take care of those in need. The security forces and the police who act with common sense to keep us safe. And anyone who struggles with this life-changing situation we are all confronted with right now, this book is dedicated to you. Disclaimer. This book is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Any information provided in this book is not a substitute for individual medical advice. If you develop a fever and a cough or shortness of breath, you should seek immediate medical attention. Introduction. I received my professional RN license at the age of 19 in Germany, where I made a vow to save people's lives. During my time working as a nurse in West Germany, Switzerland, and California, I saw many people cross over and often held a patient's hands during their last moments. One minute, there's a life in a body, and the next, it's gone. In the face of death, it doesn't matter if a person is wealthy or poor, male or female, religious or not. Most people start praying when they die. It is said the smart ones pray in thankfulness when life is abundant and beautiful, and not only when in peril asking for help. It surely is an amazing experience to save someone's life. And a part of me writing this book is about that, in a bigger sense. There are areas where allopathic medicine has made huge advances, and it is going to make bigger ones in the near future, but too often patients still get hurt from a medical approach that ignores nature's ability to heal itself. There was a huge change in my life when I realized I couldn't morally continue to administer pharmaceutical drugs to patients. What I had witnessed in hospitals was in stark contrast to my vow to protect life. The percentage of people who suffered the grave results of chemical poisoning from pharmaceuticals no longer agreed with my morals. Plants are used in TCM to strengthen organs, and in Ayurveda, balance is achieved by harmonizing the elements. When I was diagnosed with what medical doctors told me was an incurable disease, I did not accept their prognosis. Herbal medicine and natural healing increasingly interested me. I traveled around the world and met masters who healed people of hefty conditions, like last stages of cancer, often successfully. The naturopathic methods to balance the body, mind, and spirit I discovered led me to the realization alternative forms of medicine are the medicine I am most interested in learning about, and in this book, I'll share some of what I've discovered in regard to viruses and increasing natural immunity. The viral diversity originating in the jungles we burn down attacks our bodies that seem defenseless in the age of electromagnetic frequencies, microwaves, and radiation. Western medicine is held in check by viruses that literally come out of the woods. When the toxic load is overwhelming, those viruses find in us the perfect hosts. When we lose our natural connection, we can't regenerate easily. The karma of humans experimenting in laboratories with dangerous viruses and eating the flesh of wild animals like bats that are major carriers of hundreds of different viruses which are sold in Southeast Asian markets as food gets back at us now. Nature gives us what we deserve. What have we done to her? How have we treated our earthly paradise? When Mother Nature is sick, we are sick. Our bodies are made of and belong to the earth. We Earthlings are social beings. Isolation is unnatural to humans. We can deal with it only for so long before psychological and physiological effects are felt. I speak from experience. For spiritual purposes, I secluded myself for prolonged periods. Proper time management in isolation will determine our level of sanity. The third chapter of this book shines light on what to do during quarantine and lockdowns. Coronalization is not structured like an encyclopedia, but it is an invitation to change into becoming a more loving, conscious, and authentic human being. When we reason through our hearts, we also awaken to our full potential. At this time on the earth, it is of paramount importance we learn how to think for ourselves, so we can stand up in peace and calmly sing our world into collaborative co-creation. We must transcend our fears and connect our dreamlike visions from a space of oneness. If not now, when? We are all more powerful than we think, especially when we remember who we are. We have to be aware how we use our creative energy, so we don't get through this corona pandemic barely surviving, but are empowered and changed for the better. The last chapter of this book clarifies how to tune into the rhythmic and magnetic heart channel, which resides within us all. The true power of love unites us at the core. No television news is going to report on that endless source of creativity, freedom, and inspiration. You might want to switch the channel. Om Ananda, Panama, May 2020. Part 1. Considerations. What are we dealing with? The most stunning natural light show I have ever seen is a total eclipse of the sun. Have you experienced one? You can see the shadow of the moon rolling in from the distance before totality strikes. Only who's in the moon shadow experiences the 360 degrees of sunset colors on the horizon. The stars coming out, the birds and the insects joining in eerie silence. A ring of fire, the corona, burns in the sky for just a few moments before the light returns and life starts renewed again. Indigenous people recommend taking a bath in a river, a lake, or an ocean after an eclipse to cleanse the energy. Bad luck is associated with a total solar eclipse, which might signal the end of the world for those who don't know about astronomy. Superstition is a cause for many people to imagine what could happen, what is happening and why, and what has happened. We created science to understand the world in a more calculable way. Only a few extraordinary beings, however, can foresee the future, through visions more than mathematics. The ancient Maya already knew how to calculate the timing of a total solar eclipse, but with COVID-19, nobody really knows what we are dealing with. A virus, apparently. In spirituality, realizing to not know is a great start towards the discovery of the unknown. We label SARS-CoV-2 the culprit for our emergency reaction, which might or might not be adequate or justified for shutting our busy lives down. Just like a computer when infected with a virus, we run our society in safe mode while nature has a moment to recover. Dealing with something we do not have control over makes us realize we are all human and vulnerable. This virus brings us together in new ways. It does not discriminate against who it is going to infect. Neither does it accept man-made borders or laws. It is, just like the moon covering the sun, a phenomenon of nature. Where did it come from? Perhaps from a wet market in China, where the animals are treated horribly and tortured before they are killed to become food. Or did it escape a laboratory? Who knows? Speculations do not help us now. Only after some years have gone by will we know how the emergency measures toward the current coronavirus pandemic affect our way of life in the long run. We can't really blame the virus for what is happening to us. We have got to look at our way of life, how we treat the earth, and how our societies have removed us far from nature. We can't continue to live the way we have before COVID-19 struck. Hopefully the coronavirus is our wake-up call, and if it is, it's the most amazing thing nature could provide us with. This emergency crisis already helps us to unite in astonishing ways, as we have seen in Italy, where people play music on the balconies. Every evening in New York, the self-isolated population opens their windows and clap in unison during sunsets to support each other. They are worldwide broadcasts viewed by millions of people who connect through new forms of communications. Watch the Unify webcast at facebook.com/unify. The question burning in my mind is, will we restructure our lives and create ecologically sustainable societies instead of continuing to be addicted to fossil fuels, wars, AI, and genocide? It's been 6 months since COVID-19 emerged in China. As I'm writing this, the World Health Organization reports 230,000 people have died from COVID-19 worldwide, and about 2.3 million are registered to be infected with the disease. By the time the infectious disease runs its course, the death toll might be exponentially multiplied, so we are told. I received strong responses at the beginning of April from people in America who were afraid about a continuous exponential expansion of SARS-CoV-2. Where and are their fears justified? In comparison to the numbers, 3 million children die every year of starvation. The mind can no longer think rationally when the bloodstream is flooded with adrenaline during the exposure of extreme stress, fear of loss, and under pressure. Keeping people trapped in fear disables their natural intelligence. Leading scientists have recently calculated the mortality rate of COVID-19 to be 0.66%. Please research it yourself and you'll find a much lower mortality rate than what has been hyped up by the mainstream media, for whatever reason. According to an article in the Business Insider, in South Korea, where hundreds of thousands of people with mild COVID-19 symptoms have been tested, the reported case fatality is around 0.6%. Life was not completely shut down there. In Germany, testing also extended to many with mild symptoms. The fatality rate is very low there. The percentage of fatalities seem high when analyzing the official numbers published at the WHO website. The dark numbers of silent carriers are unknown, and likely a lot higher than we originally thought. Reuters News reported on April 23rd, according to a New York survey, 14% of the people in New York are naturally immune against SARS-CoV-2 already. Please look at the growth curves below. Are projected exponential calculations irrational responses triggered by a fight-and-flight adrenaline rush, or did the containment measures work? Sweden has twice as many people than Norway. I followed the different emergency responses between the two countries closely. Norway imposed the closing of schools and shopping centers in the beginning of March, and they are about to open again on May 11th. Sweden remained open and business continued as usual to the day of the publication of this book. According to the statistics published by the WHO, Sweden had less registered COVID-19 cases in the beginning of March than Norway. Currently, more people die in Sweden from the coronavirus in a couple of days than Norway has reported since the start of the pandemic. Norway responded quickly in an attempt to protect the Norwegian people. It could be argued the Swedish authorities valued the economy more than human life. When I speak with elders whose health is compromised and they are preconditioned to develop severe symptoms if they get infected with the virus, they are angry about people screaming for freedom and not wanting to do whatever they can to stop the spreading of the disease. Panama went into total lockdown. Panamanians are not allowed to go out more than 4 hours per week. If the citizens don't follow this strict rule, they can be imprisoned and pay big fines. Look at the comparison of the following two growth curves between Panama and Sweden. Both curves don't deviate a lot and they certainly do not look exponential. Can an airborne virus like the flu or the coronavirus be contained? When the majority of cases are asymptomatic, herd immunity is what naturally follows with other viruses. And how much will this temporary shutdown benefit nature? I strongly fear the effects of fewer airplanes and cars. The air is cleaner, the sky is more blue, and the water quality has improved. The rain is not acidic, and is much more quiet. Pollution levels in China and other industrial nations have drastically decreased. Why would we want to turn the pollution monster back on? We know it's going to kill us a lot faster and more effective than any virus ever could. Fear and death. We are all naturally wired for survival. All animals have instincts. Any person in a life-threatening situation struggles as long as possible. The fear of death is equal to the survival instinct. All fears are mutations of the one fear, the fear of dying. Fear that's not imaginary is an essential aspect of nature keeping us alive. Imagine walking at night through the Amazon rainforest far away from civilization. Suddenly, you hear the roaring sound of what you think might be a jaguar rapidly approaching. You freak out, thinking you could be attacked. This happened to me in Honduras. This sort of fear can protect a person from not dying. You run. Any authentic warning sign is not to be ignored. Of course, it was not a jaguar. You would never hear the panther approaching. Irrational fears are not always healthy. For example, a fresh car crash survivor is asked to get into a cab, but he's scared of getting into the car and won't do it. He's afraid of the car getting into another accident, which statistically is highly unlikely. When a girl fell off a horse, she was asked to get back on it, but she just couldn't. There are irrational fears caused by trauma. These fears can be used to a certain degree. It can help us learn about life, to not make the same mistake twice. We don't want to burn our fingers on the stove again. The fear of it prevents us from doing so. But when fear becomes imaginary, it is better transcended. Being afraid of something which does not even exist can turn into our worst nightmare. To be afraid of dying when death might still be decades away can turn life into a hassle. Irrational fears are equal to a projection in the mind, a memory causing the fearful attitude. When irrational fears, which are imaginary thought constructs, are projected into future scenarios for prolonged periods, they can manifest in the physical world. When imaginary fear becomes the guiding principle in a person's life, the confusing images in the mind tarnish the perception of reality. What sets us humans apart from most animals is that we can think rationally and are not only driven by animalistic instincts. Normally, we do have a choice. But when we are intentionally driven to be afraid, and sometimes madly so, our ability to choose is diminished. The biochemistry in our bodies during fight and flight responses urges us to deal with immediate survival, and higher thinking processes become disabled. To thrive and not only survive, we have got to look a little deeper than our hormones tell us to. How can we do that in a society that has placed more and more emphasis on safety, security, and risk reduction? The mantra "safety first" comes from a value system that makes survival top priority. The surrounding culture in the West lobbies people to live relentlessly in fear. Western civilization has constructed systems which embody fear. In those societal structures, staying safe is overwhelmingly important. I observed many traditional and indigenous cultures during my world travels. The native people seem to have a different value system than the West. Indigenous people appear much less protective of their children, although they observe them from the corner of their eyes. The native parents allow their offspring risks and responsibilities that would be crazy in most Western people's eyes. According to their beliefs, the ability for the young ones to meet their limits from an early age onwards is necessary to develop self-reliance and good judgment. In Guatemala, kids at the age of 4 already manage shops, and they take care of the smaller siblings. Most modern people, especially younger ones, retain some of this inherent willingness to sacrifice safety in order to live life fully. A friend in Mexico got stuck on an electricity power line for who knows how long before he got rescued, 15 minutes or so. The description of his out-of-body experiences during this time were extra non-ordinary. He ended up being welcomed by a warm light and was pulled back from it, since it was not yet his time to go. He almost did not want to return to his body. In fact, he seemed more traumatized from having returned from this incredibly beautiful place, where he was feeling love and loved, than from nearly dying. It taught him to appreciate life, since before it, he did not know what lay beyond. As mentioned earlier, all fears are mutations of the one fear, the fear of death. Many mystics tell us that death is not the end. Most people cannot believe it until they remember the cosmic experience that results from knowing death. Those who crossed over and returned often turn into mystics. When I nearly died in a car accident and experienced my first sunrise the following day, I was so glad to be alive, and my entire agenda had changed. I had realized how I was wasting my life doing meaningless things. as long as a person lives in fear, they are divided from the source of love. The term divide and conquer is not only about driving people against each other. When a person is separated from the source, they have no real power and are trapped in illusion. Human bodies exist in three-dimensional reality, and we perceive the world through our physical senses that send electrical signals to our brains, which construct an image of our so-called reality. When we understand that we are part of a much bigger picture, our worldview transforms from the material to cosmic perspective. Whoever is whole again also loses the fear of dying. Those who are awake and see the bigger picture are often relieved from the material spell. Imagine a candle and putting an object between the flickering light and a wall. What you'll get is a projection of the object, a shadow. The reflection of the light, that's like a shadow, is what we commonly perceive as reality. When going into the flame, like moths do, where is the shadow then? The shadow has no substance of its own. It is bound to the light and only projects where the light is not. Those who believe in the shadow world might be lost until they dissolve through love that leads to the rediscovery of the inner light. If the flame goes out, there's no shadow. Nirvana translates into blown out flame, dukkha. No memory or personality remains beyond duality.